Rich and Kathy Steubing have been longtime friends and participants in the life of this congregation. And for over 30 years, multiple decades, they have ministered in Africa, both in theological education and in community development. I know many of you know them personally. They've stayed in your homes. You have prayed for them through the years. They have prayed for us. It's been a wonderful relationship. So we're delighted that they could be here for our missions conference. I can think of no other couple with such long-standing relationship with our church and mutual love, so it's an honor to have them today. Please participate in all the aspects of our Missions Emphasis Weekend as you're able to. I know you'll be enriched. And now, Rich will come and open up God's Word. Come
right and Kathy will introduce it.
Oh, great. That's even better, yeah.
Ladies first.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. We felt that we both wanted to have a chance to say thank you for your fellowship with us in the gospel. I enjoyed hearing the choir sing because when we were here quite a few years ago, I sang in the choir, and it's great to hear you still singing so beautifully. And our children were part of the Sunday school and the youth program, and I see many of you who were involved in their lives. We all want to thank you for your faithfulness to the gospel here, because we could not be doing what we are doing without you doing what you do. And we wanted to be very sure that we brought you greetings from people in Zambia who are grateful to you, and we brought you bring you greetings from on our own behalf and from our children. We are all very, very grateful for your fellowship with us in the gospel. And it's a joy to be with you this morning.
Now, if I were back home in Ndola, Zambia, and greeted the congregation, the response is, A Mukwai. So if I greet you, you all have to say, A Mukwai. Mwashipukeni po Mukwai. Boy, these guys speak in tongues. That's incredible. That's just a good morning and an acknowledgement. It is good to be back. I'm a little jet lagged. I got in at midnight on Thursday after flying for 17 hours. But I had a pretty good sleep, so if anybody falls asleep during the sermon, it's probably not going to be me. I was afraid of that last night, but I think we'll make it. It's good to see many friends again. It's a privilege to be back, and we thank you for the invitation, and we look forward to the rest of the day together. The passage read is a familiar missions passage, but I'm not sure we've ever really preached from it in almost 41 years in Zambia. And yet we've been doing leadership training in various ways in Zambia for that length of time, and so it seemed appropriate to use this passage. Unfortunately, I think when this passage is read, people think, missions equals evangelism, and that's all. And missions is a lot more than evangelism. Even the Great Commission in Matthew 28 involves a lot more than evangelism. It involves teaching and leadership training. And in this particular passage, Jesus is doing more than evangelism. He's teaching, he's preaching, he's healing, and so forth, and the passage that was read for us this morning. But the phrase that I'd like to zero in a little bit is that people were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. And that says something about the leadership. There were no shepherds for the people. Because we've been involved in leadership training, and that's, if you like, providing shepherds for the people, in this case in Zambia and Central and Southern Africa. Now, if the Jewish leaders had heard Jesus say this, they would not have agreed with his analysis. They thought they were pretty good leaders. We know the names of at least the groups of these leaders. We know about the Pharisees. Pharisees probably the best known. Pharisees were generally pretty well educated. They rose through the society through education, very serious attention to the law. We know Jesus didn't always get along with them, but their attitude toward the common people was very negative, not too surprisingly, because the common people were generally illiterate. They couldn't read all the fine tunings of the law that the Pharisees insisted on that people keep. And so you get this terrible reference in John 7, verse 49, the Pharisees are quoted as saying, this mob that knows nothing of the law, there's a curse on them. You know, what a great attitude toward the people you lead. Well, we've heard of the Sadducees. The Sadducees are very different than the Pharisees in many ways. The Sadducees didn't rise in society through education, they had money. They were powerful, they had good connections. They controlled the Sanhedrin, the council, for most of the time in the New Testament. They're people that avoided confrontation with people like Pontius Pilate because they had a vested interest in the status quo. And so the Sadducees also despised the common people. They had very little concern with leading them. And so again, Jesus says, these people are sheep without shepherds. Pharisees, not much help. Sadducees, not much help. There are other people around that don't get quite as much attention. The zealots were there. The zealots thought the solution to society was to fight the Romans, use violence to purify the society. And if you were too cozy with the Romans, even if you were a Jew, the zealots would kill you. There were the Essenes who just checked out. They said the situation is hopeless. They just went out into the desert and disappeared for a while. But none of these leaders were like Jesus. And I'm convinced that that's one of the reasons for the emphasis here, that people were like sheep without shepherds. The leaders were useless, frankly. And Jesus needed not just missionaries preaching the gospel, but the people needed good leaders. And we've been involved in trying to produce leaders like Jesus. The difference here in this passage, Jesus had compassion. These other groups didn't. Jesus cared about people, even though these other people didn't seem to care about their own people. So when we're at the Theological College of Central Africa, and that takes far too long to say, TCCA, we call TICA, okay? So TICA equals Theological College of Central Africa. I'll save about 5 minutes of every time I refer to it, I can say TICA, all right? At TICA, where we've been since 1982, we try to train leaders to be like Jesus, not like the Pharisees and Sadducees and zealots and Essenes and people like that. And we've been doing this for a very long time. What do our graduates do? Well, just about everything in terms of Christian ministry. Many are pastors. Many are Bible study leaders, Bible college leaders. Some people teach religious education in the schools. The British system still allows that. It was a British colony in northern Rhodesia years ago. Community development, denominational leaders, you name it, our graduates are probably doing that. So I'd like to do a couple of things in the time given this morning. One is to say a little bit about how preparing African leaders at a place like TICA is different than doing it at a place like Gordon College or Gordon Conwell. And then I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about how we as North American Christians can learn from African Christians. So first of all, how is theological education different in a place like Zambia as compared to a place like North America? One is, I suppose, obvious, but we should say the curriculum is tailored to the context. We don't do things quite the way I did them at Gordon Conwell for a couple of degrees a long time ago. For example, last I checked, Gordon Conwell did not have a required course in HIV/AIDS and counseling. We do, because AIDS is huge in Southern Africa. We have had many friends die of AIDS in Zambia. And so everybody at TICA has to take this course because it's a huge problem in all of the churches. When I was at Gordon Conwell, I didn't take courses that dealt very much with demons and witchcraft and the fear that that instills in people. For example, it's very common in Zambia if, let's say, a husband dies and the woman is left with kids and so forth, and the relatives come and they want the possessions. And the woman says, but how am I going to survive without my household possessions? And she says, no, you can't have them. And the classic line is, we'll see, which means we'll go get some muti, some medicine, we'll go to the nganga, the witch doctor, and we will put a curse on you, and you will die, and so forth. And, okay, fine, here's the bank account. We have to deal with that pastorally. Another thing that happens in death is that there's great pressure for the widow to undergo what is called ritual cleansing, which means she must have sex with the dead husband's brother or close relative. And if she doesn't, then the spirit of that dead husband will be around her. She may go mad if she is not cleansed. She will certainly not be able to marry again if she is not cleansed. And again, there's great pressure on people to go through these rituals. Now, the Christians disagree with that, obviously, but in courses at Tika, we need to deal with these things straight up. But we don't do that in North America. We could go on about those things, but this is a major reason for, we think, Africans doing at least their first degree in Africa. As good as the programs are here, you just don't deal with the African context, and therefore people, if they come back at all, are not as prepared to deal with an African church, in this case a Zambian church, and so we like people to do at least their first degree in Africa. One of the other differences, and Americans may be surprised at this, is our theological education is done at a very high level academically. We periodically hear, Africa, the stereotype is if people wear clothes at all, they're in the villages and they have little thatched roof huts, and well, that's common. But, we've lived in the big city for 40 years, and people are getting degrees in lots of subjects, and we found that the pastors were way behind. And so we want to try and keep up with the rest of society and do theological education at a high level as well. So Tika's degrees are accredited internationally. We've had people come to Wheaton for masters, go to UK and Kenya and South Africa, various places like that. I work quite a bit with ACTE, A-C-T-E-A, the Accrediting Council for Theological Education in Africa. We accredit degrees at first degree and masters and PhD. About this time last year, I was at a grad school in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, looking at their master's programs to see if they should be accredited, which they were. Good program. I think some of the people from Gordon-Conwell have been to some of these places in Addis as well, and Nairobi. Africa depends on well-educated people theologically. And I'm afraid that one of the things that gets my blood boiling is the occasional person who says, but Africa doesn't need that much education, do they? As if that, Africa needs education here and the rest of us need it up here. The polite response to that is it's ignorant. The negative response is it's racist. But Africa needs just as high a theological education as anywhere else. And that's one reason we work with accreditation quite a bit. But along with providing good, solid, high-level education, that means it's expensive. And you think the global crunch has just hit the North Shore. Hey, Africa has been hammered probably twice as much. A lot of our funding from donors, of course, has been affected. The Accrediting Council itself, I was treasurer for a long time, and I've had to take it back recently because the other guy left. We're struggling with a budget because even our institutions are struggling to pay the fee, and the fee is often less than $1,000 for the institution. But it's very difficult to keep up with that. It's one thing I've been chasing in recent weeks. On a local level, at our institution at Tika, students often just don't have the funding, and it may only cost a few $1,000s a year for all of their costs, but they're struggling. And so one of the things on a display downstairs. Boy, I get lost with all these changes downstairs. I'm like, it may take me 15 minutes to get across for this thing Kathy's going to do because I'll get lost running around in circles. There's a display downstairs, and there's a project sheet there, and I'd really be grateful if some of you, who are interested either in supporting accreditation or in supporting student aid at Tika would have a look at that. We're kind of struggling in those two areas, and we'd be grateful if you would consider support for something like that. The third thing I'd like to emphasize on how is theological education different at Tika is the importance of spiritual development. I don't want for a minute to say that, Gordon-Conwell doesn't care about that, but I think we do things a little bit differently in Africa, partly because we're not confined to being sued like you are in America. So that we insist on the development of character, on spiritual development, if you like, and you can't graduate from Tika if we don't see that. Very subjective, and we probably get sued if we tried to do that here. But fortunately, that is not the case in Africa. So that no one graduates from Tika without showing some kind of character development. And I'm not talking about, well, you have to make sure they don't steal or commit adultery or, you know, swipe library books or something. I'm talking about relationships, which in Africa are very, very important, and I think in Scripture are very, very important. Some people were shocked a number of years ago when we put our top academic student on probation for his bad attitudes in class. Now, I wonder when the last time somebody did that here in North America. That's kind of tough to handle. Afraid of, you know, you're going to get the law after you. But this guy was argumentative. He didn't respect his fellow students. He didn't respect staff. And so we said, you know, you got a problem here that's going to affect your ministry. We're putting you on probation. Years later, one of our faculty members preached at his church and had lunch afterward and said, tell me, looking back at your TICA experience, what's the best course you ever had? I think the lady was hoping he would say her husband's course. But he surprised everybody and said it wasn't a course. The best thing that happened to me at TICA is being put on probation for negative attitudes. You know, that really got my attention, and I appreciate that TICA did that. So I might mention also, for the sake of Gordon Conwell, connected people, I'm very, very grateful for the privilege of doing a doctorate of ministry thesis on spiritual development called Training for Godliness in African Theological Education. And that tiny little book is being used all over Africa now for curriculum in spiritual life courses. And I'm grateful to Gordon Conwell for that opportunity. Finally, I'd like to talk a little bit about what we can learn from African Christians. I don't want to give the impression that it's all missionaries going to Africa and sharing our great wisdom, and it's a one-way ticket. It's a one-way street there. Because Kathy and I have learned so much from Africa in all of these years that I think, you know, I'd like to just mention a few areas that I think we all can learn from an African approach to Christianity. First is the importance of forgiving the past, and I particularly refer to slavery. I come from a country, most of you come from a country that has a bad history in that regard. We benefited from the importation of millions of African slaves. Frankly, Kathy and I expected that when we went to Zambia, left here in late 69, that we would find sort of reverse racism, that we would find references to your country enslaved many of our people and so forth. And you know, that never happened. Because people dealt with that. They had forgiven us despite our rather bad record. We left to go to Zambia about 5 years after the Civil Rights Act in 1964. And let's face it, even since then, we've struggled with this whole idea of racial relationships in North America here. We've never had that paraded against us. It's never affected our relationships in society. I play a lot of tennis at a tennis club. It never comes out. It never comes out in church. There's been forgiveness there. And I think we need to learn about such things. Sometimes we hang on to the past and find it very difficult to forgive. But let's face it, Christ requires us to forgive when people are repentant. And so it's up to us to try and implement that. Secondly, in a related sense, is the importance of keeping good relationships, especially in times of tension. Africans may take longer to sort out tension because relationships are so important. And if the decision has to be postponed a bit, that's okay in an African context. Americans tend to want to, let's sort it out now. Kathy likes to talk about the balance of Ephesians 4:15, speaking the truth in love, that Americans emphasize truth. Africans emphasize love. Well, we need each other on this balance. And sometimes that we can be a little bit quick to judge in the name of truth. Africans may take a little bit longer to make a decision because love is part of the relationship. My concern here, and I have to be careful how I say this, arises from the bitterness and division that has come up in recent weeks, months, years, and last Tuesday. Because I read about Christians' attitudes toward each other being very, very bitter. We insult each other, we throw rocks figuratively at each other. because we vote red or blue or whatever. And as an outsider, I realize that. I get very concerned about that. We can have differences politically. We are not allowed to insult each other as people in the body of Christ. Reference in 2 Timothy 2 in the context of church tension, I think, can apply in a wider sense. The Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kindly to everyone, correcting opponents with gentleness. But I find brothers and sisters insulting each other because politics takes over. And I just think that personally is a great problem that we are facing. Now, we shouldn't be surprised at political differences in the context of God's kingdom, because that was true in the New Testament. Have you ever thought about what it was like to be one of the 12 disciples? You got Simon the Zealot. He thought that killing the Romans was the great idea. And you got Matthew the tax collector, who worked for the Romans. These guys did not exactly choose to be on the same team. But if their focus was following Jesus, even 20, 30 years later when the Gospels were written, they're still called Simon the Zealot and Matthew the tax collector. Matthew the publican, not republican, publican, all right? So we had people who would not have given each other the time of day. They would have been at each other's throats. But following Jesus on the same team meant they could get along and they could have common values. I doubt they changed their political stance very much. I'm not convinced that, you know, people who voted red and voted blue should suddenly all become purple and mix everybody together. We probably continue with political differences. But we've got to follow Christ before we follow political leaders. And I think that's especially important in a day like today when we share communion together. We've got to get our priorities right. Africans are perhaps better at that than we are. They realize the importance of keeping relationships even in times of tension. Finally, I think we have to be careful that our wealth and education are kept in perspective. Because sometimes we Christians in the West, who generally are wealthy and educated, think that because of that, we can tell the rest of the world what to do. Americans, generally speaking, come on rather strong. I did, perhaps I still do. But when it comes to wealth, for example, most of the references in Scripture, references to wealth, warn us of the dangers. And one of the dangers is feeling that wealthy people have more influence and should tell people what to do. I've mentioned how grateful I am for a couple of degrees from Gordon Conwell, but just because I've got degrees from Gordon Conwell doesn't necessarily mean I don't have to listen to African Christians anymore. Too often I've had to apologize to African brothers and sisters because I've just assumed because I'm comfortable and educated that I can tell people what to do. And then I have to listen to them, and their wisdom is greater than mine. And so I'm suggesting that we as Americans especially have to be very careful that we listen to brothers and sisters who are not necessarily wealthy, who are not necessarily educated, who may not be from North America, who may be very different from us, because even missionaries like Steubing continue to make this mistake of coming on strong and then realizing that the family is large, Africans are much more patient than Americans, and sometimes they have lessons to teach us that we need to learn. You don't have to be in Zambia for 41 years to do that either. My plea to all of us is that we be humble, we listen to people who are not in powerful positions. That's one thing that Africa has taught us. We're still learning. We're grateful for that, those long years of experience. I do hope that you can join us tonight. There's some good African food. If you've never had Nshima, you will have an opportunity to do it. And if you do it right, you can use your fingers. So looking forward to that. Thank you again for the opportunity of being with you. God bless.